Hello everyone and welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly news roundup podcast, where we take a critical look at a number of topical developments from the past few days with a leadership and management theme. I am Rod Jones, Content Manager at the Institute, and in this podcast we will be looking at news from the week beginning July the 15th. Joining me to analyse these stories is Kate Cooper, Head of Research, Policy and Standards at the Institute. Hello Kate.
Hello Rod.
Our first story looks at the perennial question amongst leadership figures about how best to structure and position a corporate mission statement. David Abeles, CEO of golf clubs and accessories manufacturer TaylorMade, explains that a mission statement must be specific and tactical, saying that words are important, words define your actions, and actions define your outcome. Robert McDonald, CEO of US media production firm Impact Communication, points out the mission statement, vision statement and core values are only as effective as they are ingrained in the culture. Whilst Karn Manas, founder of cleantech agricultural firm Taromera, argues that leaders have got it all wrong and that mission statements must be phrased as questions. Questions, he writes, are alive. They spark curiosity, inspire continuous engagement from your team, and they can even transform your corporate identity. Kate, are there any other more eye-catching and inspiring ways for a business to convey its purpose and vision other than a mission statement?
It's interesting that both of the first two that you mentioned, Abeles and McDonald, are not questioning the importance of having a mission statement or articulating your core values. And that approach to formulating strategy, as you know, Rod, it's been around for decades and it's never challenged. And to have somebody like Karn Manas come in saying, no, you've got it all wrong. We don't want statements. We want questions. Makes us question this sort of unwavering belief that if we get the mission statement right, and even as McDonald says, it has to be supported by actions, it has to be embedded and understood within the company. But if we pose questions such as, why are we here? What is it we're trying to do? How are we going to do that really well? Isn't it a totally different conversation? So there is no answer to how you get your strategy right. Of course there isn't. But keeping that inquisitiveness and being prepared to challenge what is accepted by so many as the way you do things is really refreshing. And it'd be interesting to see whether this new approach delivers in terms of performance. So it's definitely a company to keep an eye on.
Thank you very much, Kate. Our next story looks at a firm with 900 staff and no offices, as reported on BBC Radio 5 Live recently. Kate Huston leads the developer experience team for Automatic, a large multinational company where every single one of the 930 staff work remotely. The business has no fixed office premises at all. Kate is just one of more than 1.54 million people in the UK who work from home for their main job, up from 884,000 10 years ago. Remote working may sound idyllic, but Professor Insiaglu at the University of Essex emphasises that home workers do need to take steps to make sure there are clear boundaries between work life and home life. Kate, what are the risks associated with remote working and how can employers help mitigate those risks?
Since we published research in this area 5 years ago, the attraction of flexible working, dispersed teams has continued to increase. As I've said previously today, it's often a way of enhancing benefits that people really appreciate. But what you have to remember, and although, of course, the advice here from the professor is useful, we need to have boundaries between work and home life. What this company do really successfully is recognise the importance of the social. And I think too often when we look at the list of benefits of remote working, we see saving in office costs as topping the list. And yes, it is undoubtedly the case if people work from home, they don't need office space. But what they do need is to connect as individuals, to get to know each other, to build an environment where they trust each other, where they enjoy working together, all the things that make work great. And what this company does is rather than invest money in office space, in buildings and computers, they invest in their staff. So they use the money for them to be able to travel to meet each other. And for an international organisation, how attractive is that if your team workers are scattered all around the globe and part of your job is to go and meet them? I really think that this is the future for so many organisations.
Thank you, Kate. Our next story is taken from an article in Derby Telegraph. It describes how a Burton brewery is giving staff something to cheer about after giving them an extra 2 weeks paid holiday for moments that matter. Molson Coors has launched Life Leave on top of workers' standard 31 days holiday that can be used for significant moments in life, such as moving house, studying for exams, or even the days off leading up to a wedding. Phil Whitehead, managing director, said, "We want to give our people the ability to take care of what matters in their life without running down holiday days." Kate, what can leaders learn from this initiative?
We've heard before about initiatives where people are given so many days sick leave, and if they don't take them as sick leave because they're well, they're allowed to take them as wellness days. What it's doing is recognising the complexity of people's lives, the fact that their work is part of it, but not all of it, how even 31 days, which is quite generous by many companies' standards, is still only 6 weeks out of the office. By recognising that sometimes you want time off, not because you want to go on holiday or do DIY at home, that you have important personal things that need your time and your attention, and you don't have to waste a holiday day or phone in sick. What a great place to work where there is that recognition. And I imagine, I don't know what the rules are, what constitutes an important day, but I would predict that what they get back in terms of loyalty and reduced staff turnover and people making up for time that they've missed because of this generous approach will certainly repay them. And it, again, it's the success of these initiatives, if you can actually measure them and evidence them, will then encourage other people to emulate them.
Thank you again, Kate. Again, another very positive. Our next story comes from a recent Bloomberg report, which states that employees at Japan's disco company have to think twice before hanging up their umbrellas in the office on a rainy day because they have to pay for it. In fact, according to this report, employees at disco pay for everything from conference room access, which costs $100 per hour, to advice from co-workers, rates vary. Kate, what do you think about this use of a market model in an office?
It seems a means of avoiding having difficult conversations. If you think colleagues are wasting your time asking you too many spurious requests, or the quality of advice they're providing you with is not good enough, why don't you say that rather than putting in some very complicated market system, which actually means that all those conversations can be avoided and people find out they're not valued by their colleagues because nobody pays for their time. It's assuming, of course, as well, that every conversation we have with somebody at work has to be productive and somehow delivering towards the bottom line. But as we've heard from the previous items, often people work for all manner of reasons, and it's that goodwill, it's that wanting to be there, it's about valuing what you do. That is what makes great companies, not charging for every second. And as we know, if it can be measured, it gets measured, and if it can't be measured, it gets ignored or left out, such as here with the idea of the difficult conversation.
Before we finish, Kate, is there any news from the Institute?
There certainly is, Rod. We have the Graded Companion, which we use to recognise people who have made a real contribution to leadership and management. That might be in their writing, their thought leadership, it might be impact in the community, and of course in organisations. And recently, we awarded the honour of companionship to Raymond Madden, former chief exec of the Asian Institute of Finance. He lives in Malaysia, and he sent us this message to thank us for that honour and to let us know how much it means to him.
I'm delighted to receive this wonderful award from the Institute of Leadership and Management. I've become one of their most recent companions, joining Phil Kotler, Marshall Goldsmith, and Charles Hamden Turner as distinguished companions. Thank you very much. I'm Julie Onnit.
Thank you, Kate. And that concludes this week's episode. Listeners can find further topical content in the News and Views section on the Institute's website at www.institutelm.com. And thank you once again, Kate, for your insights on these stories.
Thank you, Rod.